Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
I'm putting a section of voice people, you know, a voiceover people in my book.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you would fit in there, wouldn't you? Or are you a writer?
Well, I'm a writer, well, too. But I'm...
How should we start? When did you get started? Were you...
You mean as an actress?
Yes. Did you always want to be an actress?
Always.
As a child?
And that's all I ever did. I never had to take any other kind of a job. When I was 6 years old, you can see my picture up there in my dancing costume. Uh-huh. My mother gave me dancing lessons, and fortunately I caught pneumonia. And so I was not destined to be a dancer. And then she gave me piano lessons, which I hated, and I broke my finger playing baseball, and I didn't have to practice, so we stopped that. And I said, if you really want to know, I want to be an actress. You know, even at 6 and 7 years old, I wanted to be. So I started studying. And I studied for many, many, many years. And then, of course, during junior high school and high school and all of the... I didn't finish college because I didn't have time. I was working too hard, but I was always in plays, doing radio.
Now, where was this?
This was in Massachusetts.
Is that where you were
yes.
born?
Yes, I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, and my father was born in Connecticut. My mother was born in Massachusetts, and we're New England family. But they brought me out.
Your only child?
No, I have a brother who is a shrink, and I have a sister. But I'm the only one who went into show business. My brother is a writer. He's written several books on psychology. I used to write my own shows when I was 14 and 15. And then my mother and father brought me out when I was a teenager out here with my brother and sister. And I wrote a show called Lady Make Believe. I was still a teenager. And then during the war, when I was still very young, I wrote dramas for the Office of Civilian Defense and was cited for it, which was very nice. And then some of the people who worked on the show said, my gosh, you should be doing network radio as an actress. And I'd been trying to get in, but I was more into writing at that time. So Herb Vigran, I don't know, you've probably seen him in thousands of pictures. Herb introduced me to some people in radio, and then I was a dramatic actress, actually, and I was doing drama for a long time, and then, of course, I could do all of these voices, and my teachers used to say, well, we can't teach you anymore, because you can do more things than we can do,
yeah.
And I could.
You're teaching the teacher. Yeah.
Except they refined what I did and tempered my work and made it professional. But I was an omnivorous reader as well, and I read the classics. I memorized them. I loved poetry and would read John Keats and Shelley and so forth. I just loved poetry. And that, of course, New England people, if they aren't segregated in Boston, have a very good language pronunciation. Come on, Tara. Tara, get away. And so our enunciation is always fairly good. And you don't have a Southern twang or a Texas slang, you know. So I've got a grasshopper mind. I'm going back and forth.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, in going back, the teacher said, you can do so many different characters that we can't do. Go ahead, be on your own. And that's when I became a professional in radio. But I was doing dramatic shows. And then I would hear Danny Thomas, and I would hear women on the Durante show and the Jack Benny show, and I thought, well, gee, I can do that. Because I was already doubling in you know, little old ladies and, mm-hmm. and children and so forth. But you have to have a certain knack for pulling the snapper on a joke. And I had that.
Yeah.
So I started auditioning and got to be very well known. And I did the Jimmy Durante show every week. I did the Bob Hope show every week. I did the Danny Thomas show every week. I did a show for 2.5 years with Steve Allen, whom you see up there, called Smile Time on the Mutual Network.
I look for the glasses.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's very nearsighted, as you are, I can see. And Smile Time actually reinforced my aggressiveness about doing comedy. And so then I went into comedy, and then I was put under contract to Capitol Records with Stan Freberg. As you probably know, we did all the St. George and the Dragon was the first big one. You know, he banged me already.
Mm-hmm. With Dawes.
Yeah. With Dawes, right. And then we went on doing things, and then I did the Stan Freberg show for 15 weeks with Dawes, and I played all kinds of characters on that, of course. And they still put out the best of the Stan Freberg shows, like the Freberg Garden of Verses, or Garden of Freberg, or whatever they call it, with some of the skits that we did on the radio show. And there are still some that haven't been done that are just as topical now as they were then, and equally as funny, actually hilarious.
You do, you're quite well known for doing old ladies and witches.
Yes.
When did the witches first start?
Well, it started when I was doing my own show, Lady Maple Leaf, when I was like 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. And I've got about 300 kid stories that I wrote. I wrote them all and so forth. And that's when I started doing the witches and the old ladies. And I had a series. I can't remember what the witch is called. I'm going to have to look up some of my scripts. And then when my husband hired me, he wasn't my husband then. I'd never even heard of him before. He hired me to do the Buster Brown show with Smilin' McConnell.
And he was a writer?
And he was a writer-director. And he started off as a singer, but he was writing amazing stories when he was 17 and 18 years old. And then, of course, after radio, he went into pictures and television, books.
I noticed a movie just came out now with the voice of Andy Devine, something about a mouse.
Really?
Yeah. Now, he died, didn't he, about 5 years ago or something?
Well, Smilin' Ed McConnell died about 7 or 8 years ago, and Andy Devine just died last year.
Oh, yeah.
But Smilin' Ed was the first one mm-hmm. on the Buster Brown show, and then Andy Devine took over after Ed died.
Could you describe that show just a little bit? Because it's, you know, that's the kind of research that I need.
Oh, yes. Well, Ed was everybody's grandpa. And yet he would go, you know, he'd say, well, I want all my little kiddies now to, you listen to Froggy the Gremlin, and you listen old Smile Ned tells you. You go to school and you study and so forth, and then he'd go home and drink a quart of booze and drink a case of coke. He was a dirty old man, but he was
clean the act up for the cameras.
For the cameras and the kids, and but he was extremely effective.
It kind of reminds me of Vance Colvig.
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Same kind of character.
But Ed was a behemoth of a man. He was extremely tall. And of course, sitting down and drinking a case of Cokes after he had finished a quart of booze, you know, he must have weighed almost 400 pounds or more, you know. And obviously, that's what killed him. It's a wonder he didn't die before he did. But it was a very exciting show, and my husband was an innovative man, and I think I told you he raised animals. He used to play polo, and he wrote science fiction, and he was an all-around intellectual in every way, and interested in everything. And so the adventure stories he wrote were, I was Tanya the space pirate, and I was Gorma the witch, and there was a genie, I played a witch, and that's where, after
How
Lady Maple Leaf.
How many years did he do that now with? The...
Well, he started that in Chicago. I didn't even know him. I guess in the 40s sometimes. And then they wanted a Hollywood production, so he came out here, and he got all the famous Hollywood actors, you know, who were doing very well at that time. So it did improve, and the production was great, and the music was wonderful, and Froggy the Gremlin was a very famous little frog. And I think Ed did the voice of that. And Midnight the Cat, I did the voice of, you know, meow, that sort of thing. But then I was put under record, Capitol Records contract. And at Capitol Records, we were doing all of the shorts that were done visually in the animation studios, like Warner Brothers or Disney's or the Tom and Jerry things or the Tex Avery things that were done out at MGM. And Alan Livingston was the A&R man of Capitol Records. And he was the one who put Dawes and myself, Pinto Colvig, Stan Freeberg, and Mel Blanc under contract. So we did all of the voices, and Alan transposed the visual cartoons. Oh, I hit the mic, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Transposed all the visuals into audio for records. And so apparently Disney and Warner said, gee, who are these people who are so great, who are doing the records that we have hired other actors for to do the animated shorts? So then I started getting calls from Disney, and I did a very classic thing called Trick or Treat, which you've probably seen for Disney. Old Witch Hazel, mm-hmm. playing Trick or Treat with Donald Duck's nephews. And then Chuck Jones heard about me at Warner Brothers, and I did a Witch Hazel over there.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, with all the hairpins and so forth. And then Hanna-Barbera, this was in 1958, were still over at MGM doing their Tom and Jerry's and so forth. And they called me, and I did a witch over there, which was very funny. So then I worked at UPA, and I worked at all the animation studios. And then, of course, at the demise of radio, I was still going strong because I was doing animated commercials. I was doing voices for animation, and all the radio actors were, you know, they couldn't be bothered doing things like that. They went on, they wanted to be in front of the camera, mm-hmm. and a lot of them didn't make it. But my shining star just kept ascending all the time. And
so with the cartoon voices, what was your, would you say, your best known voice prior to
Jay Ward?
To Jay Ward.
Were
they just a lot of incidental kind of?
Well, no, I did Granny, who played Tweety and Sylvester,
yes.
at Warner's. Uh-huh. In fact, I did the Easter Bunny special doing Grandma.
Yeah, that was just last year.
Right, and then I did...
that was for Chuck Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I did The Witch, too. In the Halloween.
I forgot all about Granny. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and then I did all of the other incidental characters. I did about 65 Warner shorts. And I did Alice in The Honey Mousers. You know, we did a takeoff on The Honeymooners. And Dawes played Ralph and...
Could I have heard that on the Dr. Demento program?
We did a record, yes. Stan Freberg did...
I've heard that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was right after that.
Yeah, Dr. Demento plays it.
Does he?
Have you ever listened to his program?
No.
You know the one I'm talking about?
He
plays old kind of weird
radio
records.
Oh,
he plays
yeah.
plays a lot of Freberg stuff.
Oh, well, so, I'm on practically all of them.
Yeah. You should listen for it.
Yeah.
Well, you've heard it all.
Well, it's very amusing. I got a call from a Bob Line at KCSN. He plays old radio shows from 12 to 3 every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And they asked if I would be a guest and answer. And I sat there for 3 hours, and people would call in and I would chat with them. And they had things that I had even forgotten that I had done.
Sure.
CBS workshops. Mm-hmm. And I said, are you sure that I was on it? And they said, yes. And I listened to it, and it was I.
Yeah.
But when you do so many things, you really forget what you do, because I was doing 5 and 6 radio shows a day and then hopping out to Disney's and Warner's and making a lot of money and enjoying it thoroughly. Mm-hmm. And of course it's exhilarating when you're busy.
So for Disney you did
The Cat and Cinderella. I played 2 mermaids and the old Indian squaw in Peter Pan. I did Witch Hazel. I did a lot of their shorts. And I think Witch Hazel and Peter Pan and Cinderella, of course, are the most well-known.
Cinderella, you did Witch Hazel, is that? Cinderella, you did what?
I did the cat, Lucifee the cat.
Ah.
In Cinderella. And Witch Hazel was a short called Trick or Treat. And I recorded it, and then my husband broke his back in New York. He went back to New York to sell a program and fell off Rosemary Clooney's roof. He sublet her apartment and broke his back. And so I was back there taking care of him, and I got a telephone call from Disney. Walt liked Trick or Treat so much that they added more dialogue and made it longer, and he was right. It turned out to be a classic.
So it was really a kind of.
So I flew back.
A great experience every time you worked for Disney. You kind of felt like it was special.
Well, I have felt that way about everything. I felt that way about the Warner's films, because some of the funniest writers, some of the funniest animators worked at Warner Brothers as well as mm-hmm. Disney. Mm-hmm. Disney.
Did you work under how many directors did you work under at Warner?
At Warner's. Uh-huh. Frizz Freleng, Chuck Jones.
Frizz Freleng.
Did you?
Yeah.
Chuck, Bob McKimson. Mm-hmm. Who else? I think they were the 3 main directors. Mm-hmm. Tex Avery, of course, was there, but that was before my time. But he was before my time, too.
Yeah. Now, let's go to Jay Ward now. How did you first start with that?
I had never even heard of Jay Ward before. And he called my agent.
You had done Crusader Rabbit?
Yes, but I didn't know it. I was so busy with my own things.
Cartoons, yeah.
As a matter of fact, I never saw any of the cartoons that I did until I'm beginning to see them recently.
Oh, really?
Yes, I never saw. There are
so
many.
Busy.
There are so many Warner's films that I've done that I've never even seen. Mm-hmm. But I've got
that's
a list.
That's what Dawes Butler says.
Did he say the
yeah,
same
he,
thing?
Watches TV just to see what he's never seen before, and he's
yes.
surprised to see his name up there.
I know, and I worked for Walter Lantz too. I did Knothead and Splinter.
Oh, really?
On the Woody Woodpecker thing. Huh. Yeah, there they are up on a cell on the wall there.
Yes.
But I had never heard of Jay Ward, and my agent said, "Who is this Jay Ward? Do you know him?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, he lives in San Francisco, and he's going to be down, and he's done a series called Crusader Rabbit." And I said, "Well, I don't know what that is." But he said he has an idea, and he would like you to do a demo. So he said, could I set up a meeting with you, for you with Jay? And I said, well, sure, you know, anything. So I met Jay for lunch, and we chatted, and I said, well, fine, I'll do it, you know. So then we did, it was Paul Frees, Bill Scott.
You described that meeting with him in just a few words. Was he a shy kind of character? Was he an aggressive man?
Oh, he's not aggressive at all. And I had two martinis. Yeah, yeah. It was a two martini lunch, and I'm not used to drinking before lunch. And boy, I was so happy that whether it was a success or not, I said, yes, 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 I'll do it. And so he set up a demo. We did it. We recorded at Capitol Records. Bill Scott, myself, and Paul Frees.
Now you had known Paul. You had
oh yes,
Paul
I had
Frees
known
and
Paul.
Bill Scott
yes.
Prior to that.
Yeah. Either at UP. Well, I had worked with Paul in radio, and so Bill Scott did Bullwinkle, and I came up with a rocky voice, and they said, well, we want two spies. They, you know, they weren't identified as Russian, obviously, you know, but they were, of course, it follows that they are Russian, but it is never, never said. They were just the continental accent with a smidgen of the, of the Mediterranean, you know, or the Baltic. But then we didn't hear from Jay for a long while. But apparently they were busy doing the animation on it. Mm-hmm. And about a year later, my agent called and said, well, we're ready to go. And I said, what? He said, well, with Rocky and Bullwinkle. And I had forgotten all about it. You know, I was so busy that... it was just another demo that I was paid for, and that was it.
So Jay had already had the Bullwinkle down, and the his friend. He had already had it all worked out.
Yes, yes. It was all on storyboards.
Did he say, we want this kind of voice, or did
he suggested that he wanted the squirrel to be a little boy, but you know, kind of square, which Rocky is obviously very square. And he said he wanted the continental accent. And so I said, well, how about something like this? Now, I had done a great big Russian woman, you know, in the Warner Brothers thing. But Natasha's a sexy looking broad, you know. Mm-hmm. So I softened it and made it sexy. And he said, yeah, that's just great. Let's go with that. And of course, Paul was so great as Boris.
Yeah.
And then we got to be a stock company, because then they went into the Fractured Fairy Tales and Dudley Do Right, and Dawes did Aesop's Fables.
Well, before you
and
go
he was on
any
the Fractured.
Further with Rocky and Bullwinkle, now that was a series that you had, how long did that series take to work on? I mean, you did 132 episodes or something?
I can't remember how many of Rocky and Bullwinkle. When it changed networks, then it became the Bullwinkle Show, but it was the same show mm-hmm. with the same characters.
Yeah, yeah.
They just said, you know, change
name.
The name. Yeah. But we did about 352 or 356 episodes mm-hmm. of everything. And all
That's
funny
right.
and all... so rewarding.
Now, how long did that take to do?
Over a period of years?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I think we recorded from 59 until about 62, something like that. But then we went into the Cap'n Crunch commercials.
Now,
from there on in.
Where did you do these recordings? Was it in
different
places? Or?
Well, we first started recording at Glen Sound Studio. Mm-hmm. That's on Romaine. Near Seward. And then we moved over from there over to TV recorders. And we've been recording ever since there, you know.
Now, I know that they shipped the stuff out to Mexico. Did you...
The first time, yes.
Yeah.
The first batch.
With that, did you get the... were you able to look at the film and then do the voices?
No, in animation, we always record first.
Yeah, I was wondering how that language transition was down there.
Oh, yes.
Difficult.
Well, you see, what they do is they time all of the vowels and the labials, and so it really didn't make any difference because that's the director's job.
Now, I know that Bill Scott did a lot of the writing for that program.
Yes, he did. The Bullwinkle
sentence. Did you contribute anything?
No. No. The writing was so superb when you consider that Alan Burns, who wrote the Mary Tyler Moore Show and produced it, and Chris Hayward, Lloyd Turner of the Jeffersons, and Barney Miller. Pardon me, these were all fantastic writers. And we had them first, and then they went on to, I won't say they're greater things, because Bullwinkle is so legendary and great anyway, but they went on to live action television.
Did you ever get a script where you felt like there was some kind of inside joke that even you didn't get?
Oh, we always got the inside jokes.
You always got the inside jokes.
Oh, sure. And we'd always fall down laughing.
Yeah.
You know, we...
Was there any particular one that was your favorite episode?
Well, there were several ones. I'm sure Bill will mention the same one where... the announcer, of course, is Bill Conrad. And he said, I can double. But he couldn't. And so they got him to do Sam the Native once. You know, all he had to do was, ugh. And they said, nah, you won't make it. We had a lot of tongue twisters, like the metal-munching mechanical moon mice bit. You know, they were funny. And,
yeah.
And you know, we'd have some tongue twisters in some of them. I know sometimes I've watched the Dudley Do-Rights, and there's one where Marigold says something about the rubber buggy baby bumpers. Yeah, and you say that very fast, and you know, all of us went like a bat out of hell because we didn't stop for picture. We just, Jay said, go faster, 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 and that's what we did. And that's what's so funny about it, because the jokes are thick and fast, and you don't wait for the snapper, and you just go on. And that's what made it so beautiful, because the writing was tremendous, and very rarely was any, occasionally there'd be maybe a couple of words that were ad-libbed by the actor, but basically we stayed with the script because the script was funny and the timing was great.
Now, you did Sherman also?
No, that was Walter Tetley.
You see that? Now, it's printed in a book that I have that you did that.
No. That was Walter Tetley.
I have a...
Who has since died.
I have a book called A Complete History of Television. Something like Encyclopedia of Television, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
No.
And they have in it that you did that. I couldn't understand that.
No.
I keep hearing the voice in my head, that's not you.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's a shame. That's why erroneous things should be corrected.
Now, Bill was Peabody.
Yeah, yes. And Dudley Do-Right, and George of the Jungle, and I, of course, do Ursula in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only woman on the show.
And you do Witches, of course, for Jay.
Oh, yeah.
And name some others that you've done, just some other
Witches
incidental characters for Jay.
Well.
Is there any others you can think of? You do Nell.
Nell, Marigold, Ursula, Rocky, Natasha. Of course, I played all the fairy godmothers, too. A lot of them didn't have names, you know. A lot of them didn't have names.
Was Rocky difficult for you to do? I mean, it's a pretty high voice to do all the time.
Oh, no.
Can you still do that high voice?
Hokey smoke, I sure can.
I just wanted to hear that out of you.
Yeah, no,
it's fun to hear.
Yeah.
Now that was, of course, still, the Jay Ward things, it just seems, they seem always fresh. It seems like they were just done yesterday, but of course, they were finished in, what, 59, 58?
Or, no, they were finished in about 62.
62.
Yeah.
You then went on to do, you say Captain Crunch commercials for
Yeah,
Jay,
right.
And that's pretty much what he's done
all
these years.
Of course, we also did Fractured Flickers.
Oh, yeah, you did a lot of voices
on
that.
Yeah, I was the only girl used on that, too. And that was a hilarious series.
How many years did that go on? Do you remember? I can look it up.
I don't think it went on for years. I think we just did a whole batch of them.
Yeah. Do you know if any stations are running them right now?
Occasionally, they use them for fillers, I see, now and then. Yeah,
I haven't seen a steady one.
No, I haven't either.
So tell me, what have you done since then? Did you get back into doing straight acting roles?
I still do.
I see you occasionally on different situation comedies. Do I see you in Hogan's Heroes?
No, you saw me on A Green Acres.
Okay.
I started to do...
do you have a regular character that you
no,
do?
No, not on live action, no. I don't want to do it anymore because I don't want to be on the set at 6 o'clock, which means getting up at 5 or 4 and learning lines when I can make more money doing what I'm doing. So, I don't want to be bothered with live action.
How'd you get onto the responsibility you're not the president now, but weren't you just last year past president of the animation?
I still am.
You still are.
Yes, my year is up. The end of this year. I've been president for 6 years.
6 years.
And I am so busy writing.
How did that all start now?
Well, it's an international organization. There are 35 countries who participate. And someone had started it in Hollywood in 1964, and I became a member. But nobody ever heard of it before. And it wasn't until I came in, and I used everybody that I could, you know, Michael Jackson, Jim Brown at NBC, and all of these people, I would say, hey, listen.
Michael Jackson,
yeah.
I just gave him Ball Catcher. He came to my booth at the fair.
Well, he helped me when I spearheaded the meat boycott, as you remember. He was the one who kicked it off for me. He's been a marvelous friend of animation and everything.
The meat boycott was about three years
ago. 1973. It snowballed and. I went to Washington, D.C. and testified before the Joint Economic Committee,
really?
Chaired by Hubert Humphrey. And then a week later, I went back to Washington and co-chaired an economics conference with Betty Furness, Ralph Nader, in Benjamin Rosenthal's.
You do stay busy.
Yeah, and I'm a board member of the Motion Picture Academy. That keeps me busy.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
I'm on the Center of Films for Children. I'm third vice president, local AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. I'm a local and board member of that. And I'm on the student committee. I just announced the awards at the Motion Picture Academy of the Student Films. I'm on the grants committee under Norman Corwin at the Motion Picture Academy. And I'm writing a book, and I'm...
Do you have a title yet?
Yeah, but I don't want to say it yet. Until I'm sending two more chapters to my literary agent in New York.
Well, I could call you, let's say, in 5 months.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it'll be sold by then. I have every confidence it'll be sold.
It's the name of the book.
Yeah, right.
By the way, what I would like to use on you, I'd like to type up and send to you.
All right.
So you get an idea of what I'm going to use in the book.
Okay.
And what you like, what you don't like, what you've already left
fine,
out.
And then fine.
Get it back with me, and that'll be yeah. in about 5 months. So.
But being president of Asifa Hollywood, I initiated the Annie Awards. The one coming up will be the 7th one. I was the one who thought of selling cells, animation cells, 8 years ago. And so Asifa every year has a cell sale. Hmm. I initiated the conference.
What's the average cell go for?
Well, it depends on what it is. If if they're non...
$8 to $15 to $25.
And sometimes $150, yeah. depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. And then I initiated the animation conference at USC. And we get all of the very famous animators and directors and people who, network people, people who work in animation, in camera, in betweeners, music, sound editing. And so we have, this will be our third annual one. And I've worked very hard as president, and we're really quite well known.
Do you do as president? What keeps you busy than the average week with this?
Oh, letters, phone calls, organizing. And I helped with Filmex, help get films, help.
What do you accomplish each year? I mean, what do you try to accomplish?
We try to have, to promote animation. This is what we want to do. It's always been a stepchild in the motion picture industry. And we want more animation awards with the Motion Picture Academy, with the Emmy Awards. We want to inform people that animation is an adult art form as well as for children. And it truly is. It's matured, it's grown up. The maturation of some of the films which we see at the festivals every year, either in Annecy in France or Zagreb, Yugoslavia, Ottawa, Canada, Mamaia, Romania. All of the people get, that's another thing, organization and collecting cells so that we can put them out in museums. It's a monumental job, and it's we're all doing this for love. Mm-hmm. I don't get paid.
In fact, it
costs me a fortune, you know, my telephone and stamps.
Yeah.
But we have to be parsimonious because we simply don't have the money. And we're trying to find grants now. But we're helping students. We have Students First Films. We are sort of a background for kids to fall on. We like to introduce them to the Tex Averys and the Chuck Jones. And they give critiques on the students' film. Chuck has just been marvelous about that. And so I do all the coordinating and the thinking and writing letters and telephoning and writing newsletters. Informing all of our members of the festivals that are going on, where they can submit films.
Well, I have to get an application from you.
I'll give you one. It's last month. No, wait a minute. It's still May. On the 19th, I believe it was, we had Dave Smith, who was the archivist at Disney, brought some of his old Disney films of when Disney was on Hyperion and films on the strike, and Stephen Basusto, who was working at Disney's, and Art Babbitt brought films that they shot in 1941 of the Disney strikes. And we had Art Babbitt, Stephen Basusto, and Ward Kimball there, and Dave Smith all talking about their personal experiences as they watched it on the screen.
Yeah.
So this is what Asifa does, we have monthly meetings. I understand, I'm trying to get a line on some more reminiscent films of the early days. And I'm yeah, trying to set up a June thing for that.
Something I really like about Bob Clampett is that he saved everything.
He saved everything, but he lies. I shouldn't say that on tape.
No one hears this. And if I've heard that from a number of other sources.
Heard it from everybody.
I've heard it from everybody.
Yeah.
And in fact, that
you'd think that he
not to mention his name.
That's true.
To not even say anything. You
know, that's
try
true.
Not to mention his name.
Because he has been very unfair in doing this. If you believe
he saves
Bob Clampett,
to say
but he
that
saved
he did it.
Yeah. But he takes credit for creating Bugs Bunny and Granny and all of the characters.
Tweety Bird and thinking up the and thinking of the name for Porky Pig. A lot of things.
Well, talk to Chuck Jones about it and text Avery.
About him is that when he said he would do the interview, when I came to do the interview, he said this is just a meeting to talk about what we're going to do.
And he wouldn't put anything on tape?
No, he said no tape recorder, please. And we ate ice cream. And he said, if you're going to be interviewing me for this book, you're going to have to do it over a number of different sessions. That way we both stay fresh. And he says, I won't let you do it unless you do it right. And, you know, that'll involve quite a bit of time. And at the time I thought, well, that's great. You know, it's neat to meet with a guy who's had all this experience. And, you know, so I've gone to see him twice now. Actually, four times, I've gone there. And each time I go, he shows me movies, we eat ice cream. And it is...
Well, he knows he can't go any further.
Well, I do know that a lot of what he's saying is just, you know...
But you see, but
things... I still do learn.
But you see... The records have got to be set straight, and he has disorganized the records, you know. And you talk to Chuck Jones and Tex Avery and Friz Freleng.
It's a different story.
Oh.
Yeah, I talked to Friz, and he said the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they're furious with him.
He said Bob will take credit for everything.
Right. He was on To Tell the Truth. Last year.
Oh, really?
And Chuck was stinging. I didn't see it, but they said, will the real creator of Bugs Bunny stand up? Can you believe that? And here Bob Clampett stands up.
But the thing that's really funny is that when I go to interview Stan Freberg is mad at Dawes, and Dawes is mad at Freberg, and Freberg, and both Dawes are mad at Clampett, and Clampett's mad at all of them. You know, for my own interest, what I do with some of these tapes, for my own benefit, is that I take certain things that they say, here's an example, is that Clampett says that he used to play with a Cecil doll when he was a child and stuff, you know, like that.
Dawes's wife made the first puppet.
Yeah, you see, that's what. And I have these two stories, and I put them together.
No, believe Dawes.
Yeah, and what I do is I actually splice it so the words are actually.
Oh, you know, boy.
And it sounds like an argument when you hear it. It's how we do.
Yeah. Well, that's true. It's a shame.
Yeah,
it
because
truly is.
Especially
a shame.
With those characters, is that. They went really through so many hands, and it's really hard to trace it down to anyone.
Of
Bugs
course.
Bunny is, you know, 15 people perhaps.
Right.
You know, really.
Absolutely.
And it did,
well, you can see the advancement of,
yeah, you can see
of
change,
Bugs and
the
changes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Change
of
the
course.
Time.
Of course.
Yeah. You just rattled off a whole lot of things that you're doing right now, and you say this is your last year as this?
As president, yeah. 6 years, six did, long
how,
years.
How come the end? Did you just
well,
have enough of it,
I
let someone else
I ran for three 2-year terms, and I am so busy that I simply can't do it. I'll serve on the board and do what I can, but the responsibility is enormous on me for getting out the newsletter and...
Who are some of the people on the board right now?
Oh, we have famous people on the board. We have Ward Kimball. Bill Scott is a new board member. Lee Mishkin is a new board member. We have Aide Woolery, who was the head of Playhouse Pictures. Herb Klinn, who was the head of Format Films. Bill Littlejohn was extremely famous, as you know. Rosalind Merrifield Nelson was married to Barry Nelson, was doing a lot. Bernie Gruber just resigned. Bill Perez. Bill Hertz was at one time. And he couldn't take the pressure, you know. But the pressure evolves on me to do all the coordinating. And, you know, I really have to do my own thing now. And I,
are you looking forward to just, now that your husband's passed away, and just to get away from that and
take
some time out for yourself?
Well, I eventually just want to write and produce.
And what would you be writing, comedy or...?
Well, this book that I'm writing is pure nonfiction satire. It's mordantly witty, let's say. And then after that will come a book on my look at the at my career. And I know everybody in the business, you know, in the animation business, everybody. And I've worked with them and for them all and been friends to them. And it'll be, it's a book that nobody else can write except me, because I don't think there's any woman who has done what I've done to the extent that I've done in animation.
Yeah,
and records.
Do people ever just recognize you because you've done so much? Do they recognize your voice? Do they say, hey?
A lot of people. Do you know, I drove in a parking lot once. I was going to see Close Encounters of the Third Kind, as a matter of fact, in the Cinerama. And the parking lot boy said, do you have a pass? And I said, yes, I do. I've got it right here. You know, it's a special invitation. I said, here's the special invitation, and where do I park and so forth? And he said, you're June Foray. And I said, yes. How did you know? Because a lot of people don't recognize me visually. He said, as soon as you opened your mouth, I knew you. And this has happened to me several times.
That's great.
Which is very flattering, mm-hmm. Truly.
Did you ever, you know, face a job and they say, well, June Foray, oh, well, we don't want to hear her. I don't want to use her because she's just used so much.
I'm sure. I'm sure that has happened.
Because you are, because there were so many men doing voices and very few women doing voices.
Yeah. That's true.
That you kept on hearing that sound crop up.
And a lot of women have impersonated me. I hear a little old lady, I won't mention the lady's name, and I thought, when the hell did I do that? And it was an impersonation. You know, there have been so many rip-offs of me, it's ridiculous. But I don't care. I made a bundle, and I'm still working. You know, I just recorded a Christmas special, I think I told you, for Chuck Jones, mm-hmm. for CBS. And that's, I play the voice of Raggedy Ann and a reindeer. And Dawes plays Raggedy Andy. Mm-hmm. And it's, Chuck wrote the script and directed it. And it's charming, it's funny, it's witty, and it'll be a lovely special.
I think we're just about wrapped up.
Right.
I got the essence of what I need.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.